Spy Magazine was co-founded in 1986 by current Studio 360 host Kurt Anderson and current Vanity Fair editor Graydon Carter. Spy was notable for its satire, mostly at the expense of politicians, high society, and the entertainment industry. And throughout its 12-year run, one person caught Spy's collective imagination more than anyone else. Guess who? Bruce Feierstein, a former Vanity Fair contributing editor, described the magazine's obsession in a Vanity Fair piece last summer. Quote, "Over the course of our years at Spy, we fact-checked his books and his finances with predictable results, trolled him by sending minuscule checks as low as 13 cents to see if he'd cash them. He did. And wrote up his all-but-forgotten business debacles. Remember the Trump Castle World Power Boat Championship?" The magazine folded in 1998, but was back in the news this year because of another little habit of theirs, epithet creating. In this case, short-fingered vulgarian. On this week's podcast extra, we're highlighting a piece from an upcoming Studio 360 show, which will be all about Trump. Host Kurt Anderson reminisces with his erstwhile colleague, Susan Morrison.
So when Graydon and I, that's Graydon Carter and I, were creating Spy, you were the very first editorial person we recruited. The first person other than the publisher. Of course, we started reporting on and ridiculing Donald Trump in the very first issue, which I had to look up to see what the cover story was. It was Jerks, the 10 Most Embarrassing New Yorkers.
No, I remember when we were first talking, you showed me the business plan for Spy, and Trump emerged even from the business plan as kind of the star. It was almost
really?
Like I was looking at a movie treatment, and the lead character was Donald Trump. And you know, as we went on, it's almost like he kept kind of cropping up as our main character.
It's interesting that he was in the business plan. I had no memory of that because, you know, 1985, 86, when we were doing that, he wasn't that famous. I mean, not everybody in New York even knew who Donald Trump was.
I think that's right. I think we all knew about him because we were journalists. And, you know, one of the things that made us all want to do spies because we were accustomed to hearing great stories about all kinds of public figures all the time from friends. And yet these weren't the stories that were making it into our publications. You know, they would end up edited out. And it was an era when the press was largely sycophantic. You know, no one challenged the powerful. It was very bland. And, you know, the idea that we could actually report, check, and print this stuff and that it would be highly entertaining was radical.
One of the things we invented that we did in Spy was our special nicknames for famous people that we used over and over and over again, which was part of the humor every time we mentioned that person. Leaving Trump aside for the moment, what were your favorites?
Well, I loved Larry Tisch, dwarf billionaire.
Right.
And that one has the great side story, where after we had used it a few times, we got a letter from Larry Tisch's doctor, his physician, explaining to us
that
Tisch wasn't technically, medically speaking, a dwarf.
Yeah.
So would we please not call him that anymore?
He was the head of CBS at the time.
But what I think a lot of people don't realize is that one of the things that I don't know if it was conscious or unconscious, but that inspired us to create our own little private language this way, our own series of repeating epithets, was this thing that Private Eye had done for years,
right,
just to have a lot of little code words, kind of insider's language. Like when someone was described as tired and emotional, it meant they were drunk.
Right. And that's, of course, was the famous British satirical magazine that still exists, unlike Spy. And that was like the main thing we stole from them, actually.
I think the only thing.
Yeah. My favorite was former Secretary of State, whom we called the socialite war criminal Henry Kissinger. I loved
that. That's right. Well, when Trump's campaign started to become real, you know, we all, I mean, I don't know if you remember, a year ago, a bunch of us met to talk about potentially doing a one-off issue of Spy to celebrate the 30th anniversary. and it would be a kind of a fake Trump endorsement issue. And everyone said, nah, he's going to be out of the race. Forget it. We can't do it. And we came up with so many great ideas. But around that time, it was pointed out that we didn't actually use short-fingered vulgarian until something like 8 issues in,
right. Which
I was surprised
by.
We
tried out other things.
Yeah, but and this here's a little list of some of the other things we called him, which I think are kind of fantastic. Well-fed condo hustler. Ugly cufflink buff.
We actually said these?
Yeah. Shuttle-owning dilettante megalomaniac. This is my favorite. Joyless punk millionaire. Forbes 400 dropout.
Those
aren't they good?
Those are good. No, short-fingered vulgarian. It's funny that that's the one we decided on. I remember the short finger thing. That was based on Graydon's empirical observation of his fingers when he did his magazine profile of him before we ever started Spy.
I think that one probably stuck because we had empirical evidence that it upset Trump.
Yes.
Because he would circle pictures of his hands in gold Sharpie and send them to us. I think he continues to send them to Graydon.
He does 30 years later.
And again, the great thing about writing about Trump back then, you know, Abe Rosenthal and others we wrote about would always just say, oh, that's garbage pail journalism. I never look at it.
And people didn't respond.
But we knew that Trump read it. It was so satisfying to know that we were getting under his skin. It was like bear baiting.
You edited, I recall, our first big, densely reported cover story about Trump and the Trumps. What was that like?
Well, that was called Ivanorama, a very special investigative tribute. And a writer we had never met before named Jonathan Van Meter wrote to me. He was a correspondent at Atlantic City Magazine, you know, one of those little local kind of tourist magazines. And he, as an Atlantic City kid, he had been hearing stories about Ivana's handling of, she ran one or two of the casinos down there, and just kind of hair-raising stories about things like, I remember, you know, all black employees were kept off the casino floor, all kinds of, you know, just creepy, unpleasant management tactics and hair-raising, you know, tirades and everything. And so that, I think that was the first real evidence we had beyond just his sort of aesthetic unpleasantness,
yes,
that he was actually a bad guy.
Right.
You know, a liar, a cheat, financial malfeasance. And that was, it was great fun to do. We also learned about all of the you know, his tendency to sort of inflate everything. Everything was top. Ivana was, according to him, a top Czech Olympic skier. Well, she was never on the Olympics team. You know, a top model. She was, you know, maybe modeled for Sears or something.
Yeah. So less than a year ago, as this Trump thing has happened, when the short fingers and small hands thing becomes like part of the national discourse.
It was unbelievable. And you know, there is an aspect of the fact that he took it up and kind of ripped the scab off and invited the whole press corps to dig back into Spy.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of like answering, when did you stop beating your wife? I mean, why he did it. Anyway, I'm glad he did. It's enlivened the debate.
But I know, I remember when Marco Rubio, for his 48 hours of trying to be funny, brought it up.
The next thing, now, the other thing he says, he's always calling me Little Marco. And I'll admit, the guy, he's taller than me, he's like 6'2", which is why I don't understand why his hands are the size of someone who's 5'2". Have you seen his hands? They're like this. And you know what they say about men with small hands?
He used it, and then Trump responded to it as though it was about his manhood. And,
right.
Which just grossed me out because I have said again, my most emphatic for the record insistence is that we never intended it to be about that.
No, we were actually kind of prudish about certain
yes,
things like that. It wasn't a silly double entendre.
It was just a juvenile thing.
The
guy had short fingers.
Had weird hands.
Yeah. And then I think I actually did a spit take when I was watching the debate where it came up.
He hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee it. Okay.
This isn't a debate for the nomination for the presidency.
Now, speaking of Trump's body,
Yes, isn't it?
When I was looking through past issues, something I had completely forgotten is that there were times when we wanted Trump on the cover. We got all kinds of great celebrities to be on the cover, but sometimes we wanted someone on the cover who would, of course, never pose. So it was pre-Photoshop. So we had this weird Jetsons-like technology called Zytec or something, which was very expensive. We would take a picture
like a mainframe computer
of a regular person and then somehow get the other person's head on their shoulders.
Yeah.
And the person who posed for Donald Trump's body again and again was you.
At least in that one case, I
no,
did.
And you were also on the
really?
Cover of Spy High. I noticed here that we didn't do anything to change your fingers.
Yeah, that's the tell. The fingers are way too long.
Now, what I'm doing, I'm showing Kurt this this cover of the issue of Spy from April, I think, 88. It was the nice issue. And it was Donald Trump smiling, looking relatively normal, giving a big thumbs up to the camera. And then the way the cover worked is that you would turn the page, and again, juvenile as ever, you'd see him having fallen down with a Spy logo, kind of fallen down, bashed his head. But
I remember him actually after we did that cover, he actually commented on it and saying, you know, whoever they got to pose with me isn't nearly as whatever, attractive or handsome or manly as I am.
Well, I think we can say that in terms of physique, you've aged better than Trump.
And by the way, he's practically a decade older than I am. I just want to make clear.
Well, somebody, you know, it's been nice that after 30 years, Spy has appeared in the press a lot in the last year. And I was reading one of these stories, I think from Bloomberg, and the reporter had crunched the numbers and calculated that Trump appeared 8.7 times in every issue of Spy.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nice to know. That's the average?
That's the average. 8.7. I think in the first 5 years
right.
or something. But
Susan, thank you so much.
Thank you. That was fun. Is he going to have us killed now?
Susan Morrison is an editor at The New Yorker. Kurt Anderson is the host of Studio 360, made right here at WNYC. Next week's 360 is a full hour on Trump, with MSNBC host Lawrence O'Donnell on how Trump nailed the art of playing a politician on TV, the bonds between late-night comedy shows and candidates, and the inevitable Trump impersonator. You can find it wherever, and you should. You've been listening to an On the Media podcast extra. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.